if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 341. This is our 2025 Cognizant Classic plus Investec South African Open Tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous golf betting system website, where we have in-depth betting previews for both the Cognizant and South African Open. We've got PGA National, the champion course strokes gained rankings, well worth having a look at. Detailed form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for all of the golf action this week. All of this content is available across both events completely free of charge. There is no paywall at Golf Betting System. On X, you can follow Barry at A Good Talk. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Steve Bamford and Paul Williams is what you search if you want to get us on Blue Sky. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available each and every week. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name where you are in the review. Now, this one is from Yuri, and Yuri is in Chicago, Illinois, titled Friend of the Podcast. I started playing in a PGA Fantasy Golf League 2 years ago. At first, I didn't really know how to pick players week to week. Luckily, I found your pod early on, and it's helped me win the league my first 2 years because of your recommendations. Amazing! My friends think I'm cheating or having someone else make my picks. They call my team the Consortium. Little do they know, the Brain Trust is just a couple of witty British lads I listen to every Tuesday after I put the kids to bed. Keep up the good work. I'm already in first place this season. Well, Yuri, he is the two-time James Fowler's champion. Yuri from Chicago, thank you for your five-star review.
Brilliant stuff. Well done, Yuri. Barry, no mention for you on there.
I don't need it. I just heard an amazing story about Yuri's dominance. So that's all we need to hear. Happy Unbelievable. Great stuff.
Brilliant.
I just want to mention at the top here, if you are consuming this podcast on YouTube, we would love to hit a new increased target of 150 likes. I've upped it. We've actually going for 150 likes this week as we edge ever closer to Augusta. All of our content, including this podcast, which contains no ads, is completely free. So if you like the pod, do the decent thing and please subscribe to the channel. The button is just below the screen. Right. We had last week off, chaps. I don't know if we want to talk about Torrey Pines and the Genesis Invitational. I knew absolutely nothing about it. I had a complete blackout. Didn't watch any golf. Didn't look at any leaderboards. Just knew that my players weren't doing very well. But we can, of course, also talk about Mexico and Kenya last week. Paul, did you have any takeouts from the Genesis? They played at Torrey Pines a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, not overly. I guess your focus quickly shifts to the more recent week and the action that's just happened. But I'd probably better serve to talk about that. It's certainly an exciting couple of tournaments that we managed to observe over the weekend. I know, Barry, you were a little disappointed with how things panned out in the end after you'd backed our friend Aldrich last week.
Yeah, it's not been bad. Like, I took a little bit of Ludwig the week before, so that was happy days. We also got a bit of a chuckle out of Maverick McNeely getting up there, even though he's sort of is that good enough to kind of get him a petition to get out of the Post-it Note of Doom, Steve? Or I'm not sure the criteria.
Careful now.
He's off.
He's not on the Post-it Note of Doom. I was just cussing him after he bogeyed the last the week before and cost me an each way return. Of course, he then goes and finishes second the week after in a elite signature event field. That's golf betting right there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It's another win for a European player. This strong early season for the Euros. I'm kind of getting worried. Have we like hit this like hot streak a bit early in the year with the Ryder Cup in September? But anyway, that's for a bit further down the line. I backed Potgieter. I read an article, a tipster article, just on Wednesday. It kept highlighting the length required, and Potgieter was one of the tips, and I'd forgotten about him, so popped a couple of euro on him on the exchange and kind of thought nothing of it, and then had the Sunday sweats watching him, and then Campbell got one of the luckiest breaks in terms of timing of a tournament you'll ever get to help him get over the line and win with a birdie, so that kind of stung a bit.
Barry, you're the Mexico Open whisperer, aren't you? You had Jake Knapp last year, who managed to just about duck over the over the line, and this year you had Potgieter, who I've no idea how he didn't win, to be honest.
I would have had Campbell. He had a tough Sunday. Clearly, like, he's only 20 years old, and you can see that, you know, it means a lot, and there is pressure kicking in there. Some short game issues, but you know, he's working on those at Ernie Els. He's gonna be something else. If he can figure out the short game and tighten that up to even a regular tour standard, he'll be amazing. Much better Sunday this time round than he did at Torrey Pines a few weeks ago, when he was in contention and Harris English won, but like it kind of stung. So I don't know what else to say. It's a wild, wild bounce from deep in the out of bounds for Campbell.
One of those golf betting scenarios where you've got the guy who fits the course perfectly in a playoff against the guy who absolutely doesn't fit the course perfectly.
He drives the ball as long as Jim Furyk.
Yeah, exactly. And then it goes completely the opposite way. But yeah, not unlucky, Barry, because that's a couple of playoff losses you've had over the last few weeks. So you must be due a big win. There's got to be one coming, Barry.
Maybe a 300-1. I'll be okay if I can get one of those. We were just saying this. Now it's trying to find the right course for Potgieter. And he'll certainly be on the bookies' radar, so price will be short. And I kind of, when somebody's chasing their first win, let's find out. We'll see.
This is the point. We've got next week, we've got Bay Hill signature event. You're then going to have the lower grade players playing Puerto Rico Open. If Potgieter turns up for that, he's going to be something like 12-1 favourite. So, you know, in an event where Bryce Garnett won last year off form of miscut 59, and they were all Corn Ferry events. It's one of those. It really is. But it was there and now, wasn't it? That was the one you were getting good prices on a bomber's track of a guy that was just lashing it off the tee. And he then gets beaten on a bomber's course, probably the ultimate bomber's course, by the shortest player on the PGA Tour off the tee. That is golf betting. Who had hit it out of bounds and it just hit a tree trunk and went straight back the other way. Painful. You Ryder Cup teams, Scheffler, Xander, Bryson, Colin Morikawa. Maverick McNeely now is into an automatic qualification place for Team USA. He's sitting there in fifth place. Not on my Post-it Note of Doom. Six is Patrick Cantlay, Finau, Henley, Harman, Horshaw, English, Thomas, top 12. You've got the likes of Wyndham Clark, Tigala, Lucas Glover, Sam Burns, Daniel Berger, Cam Young out of the qualification spots, and of course Jordan Spieth, who plays this week. Europe, Rory McIlroy, Hatton, Rasmus Højgaard. Ludvig Åberg has jumped into fourth spot, clearly will be playing. Shane Lowry at five. And the guy that isn't good enough for the European Cup team, according to Paul Williams, Thomas Dietrich in the top six qualification spots. Interestingly, Paul, completely off of DP World Tour starts, John Parry, after Kenya last week, and his runner-up finish, is up to number 10, above Tommy Fleetwood and Laurie Canter, for Ryder Cup qualification.
Yeah, he's been playing some good stuff. Again, I maintain that any player who's got aspirations of making the team is going to have to perform at one of the highest, highest level tournaments between now and September. And whether John Parry's got that in the locker remains to be seen. But at DP World Tour level, he's been playing some good stuff. And again, he's one of the favourites to win this week over in South Africa. So there's plenty of respect for him, and quite rightly too.
I didn't know that Barry was on Pot Gita, but I so wanted Stefan Jaeger to win that tournament so that I could play that clip again. And then you'd have had both Jaeger and Dietrich in the qualification spots for the Ryder Cup. But maybe that's why Stefan Jaeger won't make the Ryder Cup team. Because I thought that tournament was sitting there for him in terms of Mexico, but did nothing. Now, I can't pronounce the guy's name, but we had a maiden DP World Tour winner in Kenya, Paul. Take it away.
Yeah, Jacques Krushvik or something similar to that. I don't know. He's one of those players, and I'm sure we've all got the same, one of those players that I tend to put a line through quite early on in my analysis, and clearly absolutely the wrong thing to do last week. But just one of those that you always think, you know, he's going to be one of the also-rans at DP World Tour level. I mean, he's got three wins at Sunshine Tour level over the years, which is fine, but yeah, certainly not stellar in the context of some of the players out there last week. Nothing at DP World Tour level. You know, the odd flirtation with the leaderboard and then a rapid descent down the leaderboard. But the only thing I'll say is in my written preview last week, I did talk about some of the previous winners on that course having recorded a top 10, top 15 on their previous attempt at it, and he had finished 11th the previous year. So in that respect, he did fall into one of the buckets that I looked at. But yeah, I don't know. That combined with the price, he was a best of 80-1 early on Monday. I guess if you were looking at maybe 150, I could have been interested as an each-way shot. But yeah, it felt like there were plenty of better mid-priced options out there than him. But don't take anything away from him. He played really well. He held it together when it needed to be held together on the back nine. And as you say, broke his maiden. Impressive.
He was really solid.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing wrong with the way he played. Nothing wrong with the way he struck the ball and managed to keep the rest of the field. And as you know, the aforementioned John Parry, it's significantly enough arm's length to get over the line.
Yeah, seemed to be enjoying it and very focused at the same time, which is, I guess, what you might be able to, you know, maybe call the zone that he got in on Sunday. It was really good to watch.
Yeah, he'd finished, 21st it was at Dubai at Rolex Series level. So, you know, you could have looked at that and said, well, it's a higher level and, you know, he's entitled to be priced at something, you know, that's a little bit more or a little bit shorter so that he could, to fully reflect his chance there last week. But yeah, as I say, it just one that I couldn't quite stomach. But I know there were a few people, I saw a few betting slips flying about where they'd backed him. So well done if you managed to snare him last week.
Last week was painful for me. I chose Christopher Ventura over Aldridge Potquita in my selections. I think he was first round leader and then decided just to shoot par scores for Friday and Saturday and then played well on Sunday, which doesn't bode well for me for Ventura. One of those players that might be one, you know, gets a sniff of the lead. Oh dear. But I have got a new entry, Barry, and it's not Maverick McNeely. I've got a new entry for my post-it note of doom. Right, the list currently is Ben Arne, Austin Cook, Emiliano Griot, Russell Henley. Most of these are playing this week. Matt Kuchar, Luke List, Patrick Rogers. Patrick Rogers. I was laughing when I saw him at the top of the leaderboard at that Genesis signature event. You just knew that Patrick Rogers was not going to win. Adam Scott in majors. I might change that, you know, to Adam Scott this season, because when you're negotiating a deal with PIF for the future of the PGA Tour and you're playing all this TGL, he must barely be practicing. And it kind of looked like that when he was playing at Torrey Pines the other week. And Brendan Todd. Now, who's the new member, Steve? Who's the new member of the squad? Well, this guy has made 104 starts on the PGA Tour. So relatively inexperienced. He's had a backdoor second place at the Corrales in 2022. He also had a genuine second place when he was in contention from 36, 54 holes to the end at the John Deere Classic in 2023. Can't take that away from him. He was two shots away from the lead on Sunday after going back-to-back birdies. I think it was 7 and 8, and I'm starting just to get a little bit excited. And then, from the stretch from holes 12 to 17, he went bogey, double bogey, bogey. I'd still play him in DraftKings. There's no doubt the guy's playing well. But from a betting perspective, I've got no faith in him whatsoever moving forward. Step forward, Alex Smalley. You are on Steve Bamford's post-it note of doom.
Yeah, he was disappointing, wasn't he?
I
was
disappointing? On him last week as well. Oh, well, Paul.
Yeah. As you say, he got himself into a position where he could quite reasonably have launched a decent back nine and won that tournament. He was at 18 under at one point, and what was the winning? Or the 20 under was the mark to get to the playoff at it. Yeah.
They didn't go any further away, did they?
No.
And he was like a Twix bar in 30-degree heat in my back garden in, I was going to say July, but let's say October, the way that our summers work these days. But yeah, Alex Smalley, he's gone to me.
This is a warning for us, Paul, and all the listeners.
Back in this
Smalley,
week.
Smalley is going to win within the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's going to win the Puerto Rico Open at 16-1. Alex Smalley.
Oh, I'm absolutely all over it, Barry.
Yeah. Like a rash. Big, huge asterisk in the weekly note I have for reminders on golfers. He's got good stats, but yeah, if he can sort out that strokes gained mental game, we've got the win, Paul. So now's the time to strike when Bamford's eyes are looking elsewhere.
He's coming.
Let's start with this week's golf shower. The Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. What catchy name. You got the Americans, they know how to promote a product, don't they? The Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. That is nigh the Honda Classic for us regular golf punters that have been doing this for a long time. We know the course very, very intimately. The Champion Course, PGA National Resort, Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Now, this golf course is literally where most of the elite golfers in the world live, in this area. Palm Beach, Jupiter, Pontevedra Beach. This is where they live. And a few of them, a tiny amount of them, are managing to drag themselves out of bed this week and actually play this event, because it isn't the easiest event, because the golf course is a bit of a brute. Although, as the PGA Tours want, they are softening it each and every year. Used to be a tough par 70. Now it's a par 71. They've turned the long 500-yard par 4 10th into a very easy par 5. Just what you like to see, Barry. We are in Florida. We've moved to the Florida swing. We are going to see PGA National, next week Bay Hill. The week after that, we are going to see TPC Sawgrass for the Players' Championship, always a highlight of the year. And after that, they go to the kind of Carolina tree line type golf course up in Tampa Bay at Copperhead Innisbrook. So 4 consecutive weeks of Florida Sunshine State golf. They're also going to throw the Puerto Rico Open in there next week as well, just to double the workload. The original design is a Tom and George Fazio. It had a Nicklaus redesign in 2002, 2014, and most recently 2018. Florida golf, think flat as a pancake, water everywhere, Bermuda grass. And you won't be a million miles away. 7,167 yards. Holes with water hasn't been played. I'm amazed Tony Finau isn't playing this week. 15 of the 18 holes have water in play. Number of bunkers, 60. Acres of fairway, 25. I also read on the fact sheet this week that they have trimmed down some of the fairway widths even further this year. We have a first in terms of agronomy as well. We've got overseed across fairways, rough this week, which we've never seen before. It's just always been pure Bermuda grass. So, Celebration Bermuda grass overseeded with perennial rye grass. The rough is TIFF Sport Bermuda grass overseeded with perennial rye. They've upped the length of the rough this year to 2.5 inches. Now, maybe that's more because they've topped it with perennial rye than anything else. Tends to be a bit not as thick as the Bermuda grass. Don't know why they've done that. The greens are 7,000 square feet on average. They feature TIFF Eagle. I remember, Paul, when all the golf courses used to be TIFF Eagle Bermuda grass, but that seems to be a vogue that's disappeared. TIFF Eagle Bermuda grass, and they are quite chunky at 7,000 square feet. This golf course, though, there is water in play both off the tee and on loads and loads of approach shots. So we've got slightly different agronomy this year. And I tell you, I've got to say, boys, we've got different weather in play this week as well, by the looks of it. As we record this podcast, there is light rain falling in West Palm Beach. I've done a little bit of a calculation. They've had 13 mil, about half an inch, from last evening into this morning. Bearing in mind, it's very early over there, like 2 a.m. as we're recording this. The rain is about to stop. So that course has had a good dousing over the last 12 hours. There's no rain left in the forecast, so it is going to dry out from this point. But I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if we have a soft golf course on Thursday. The most notable thing, though, here is, don't forget, Florida golf, synonymous, almost infamous for heavy strong winds. I'm seeing nothing stronger than 10 miles an hour this week. I reckon, you know, bearing in mind that 17 under won this last year, I wouldn't be surprised if we reach 19s and 20s this week. And if you'd have said to me 3 years ago, Steve, we're going to soon be in a situation where the winner of the Honda Classic, Nii Cognizant Classic, these days, is going to be at 20 under par around PGA National. I'll tell you, he was a madman. Mm. But I think we might see it this week.
The teddy bear hug is coming. No, but the bear trap is gone.
It's going to be the bear hug, not the bear trap, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a gentle hug, not a bear. Yeah. It's, they had to do so. We talked about this over the years. Like they were struggling to attract names to come play the tournament because it was playing difficult and players were able to pick and choose their events, blah, 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 blah. So they softened the challenge a bit.
Yeah.
Has the field strength increased over the years to match that? I have not done that research, but
Last year we had Rory
here. We are where we are.
And very, very weak field. And the year before, I mean, one year it was really bad. I mean, Keegan Bradley was like going off at 16-1 and this kind of stuff. I think it's slightly deeper this week. Lowry, local. Henley, winner here. Sepp Strucker, winner here. Sung Jae-im, winner here. Then you've got Berger, Pendrith, McCarthy. It's not exactly stacked with the biggest names, but it's not a bad field. I mean, we've even had Jordan Spieth playing here for the first time ever this week.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a golf course that doesn't suit Jordan Spieth, I'd suggest it's this one. Interesting enough, when you look at this golf course, you look at the 14 holes that aren't par threes, eight of them, in my opinion, statistically, when you look through this, eight of them actually favour accuracy over power off the tee. Eight of the 14. Doesn't scream Jordan Spieth. Graseman, Benarn, Keith Mitchell. Yeah, it's a decent field, but it's not stellar. I mean, clearly they're all going to turn up next week at Arnie's place. Why would you sort of need to get drag yourself out of bed this week to play an event that's only got an $8 million prize fund? Anyway, that's PGA Tour golf these days. I actually quite like the field. I thought there were some different angles this week. Anything you want to add before we start going into our selections?
No, as you say, it's a shame really. There's not a little bit of wind in the forecast because that does tend to make this event a little bit more exciting, particularly on the tough holes, as you've described. But yeah, we'll see if it is soft. As you say, I think you probably can find, you know, top level or top end teens under par getting to the winning total, which is a shame because in the past we've seen single figures good enough round down.
Yeah. Definitely a case of feast or famine here. We've had proper elites win this, and we've had players you've barely heard of. I mean, Eric Cole got into a playoff 2 years ago, and if you look back at Eric Cole, who was a rookie, local lad, had done absolutely nothing. So I get the feeling this week that there are names further down the betting that might get involved, that may shock people. I haven't backed him, so that's a great thing. Ryan Gerard is one. I think Ryan Gerard is playing some great golf. And also, I'm just throwing names out there from a DraftKings perspective and from also, you know, from Yuri in Chicago, who's looking for names to put into teams. I think Jake Knapp could go potentially well this week. I think there's nothing wrong with Grayson Sigg if you want a sort of top 20 finish. I'm scanning and scanning and just looking for names at bigger prices. Christopher Ventura is playing some really nice golf at the moment. There's names. Even, and I don't know if this is something that might interest you, Paul, name that kept jumping out to me from a DP World Tour perspective. I haven't tipped him up, but could go well. Matteo Manassero. Because this is one of those rarities where someone like Matteo that has got no power off the tee, but is relatively accurate, will actually be at least neutral and potentially gain strokes off the tee because, as I said, eight of the 14 holes prefer accuracy and positioning to brute power.
Yeah. Yeah, something that's a little bit shorter does at least give him a bit more of a chance. There was a worry, wasn't there, with Manassero playing the US tracks that you were going to struggle to find ones that really would give him an opportunity, but This is one of the better ones. I'd probably still prefer him on a classical tree line kind of setup, but interesting to see how he goes.
Even Francesco Molinari is starting to show a little bit of form.
Yeah, it's good to see, isn't it?
Matteo Pavon, he was another one that you look at him statistic, just a few signs, green shoots of. I'm throwing it out there, Paul, but I don't think if you look at Le Golf National form and Wentworth form and you look at Europeans that have done well here, there's definitely a crossover there.
Yeah. No, I can see Paris National from a Florida perspective in general because of the amount of water and it's quite a flat set up anyway. So, yeah, I get the correlation there.
That put me off Nikolai Højgaard, who's playing some really nice golf at the moment, but I'm not sure. When I looked at Højgaard and I looked at what he's done at Wentworth, you know, Shane Lowry's got such a cast iron record around here. Rory's won here. Nikolai's done, he's done nothing at either Le Golf National or Wentworth. And I know he's still young, but that kind of put me off him. I kept this really simple at the top. What you get here, you seem to get this breadth of winning odds. So Ekro last year, 100 to 1. And you could build a case for Ekro when you look back at him. I think he was top 7 for tee to green the week before in Mexico. Then you've got Straka, 125 to 1. He was coming off a 15th place the week before. Matt Jones was 80 to 1. And Keith Mitchell, we're getting wild and wacky, 300 to 1. Paddy Harrington, he was in a head-to-head with Daniel Berger, who was a rookie back in 2015, 400 to 1. Russell Henley, 300 to 1. So big prices. We've got Michael Thompson as well, 300 to 1. Big prices do win here. But then you get Chris Kirk, 25 to 1. He was in red hot form. Sungjae Im at 35 to 1. Justin Thomas, 12 to 1. Fowler, 16 to 1. Scott, 20 to 1. McIlroy, 9 to 1. So it's either the bleeding obvious or players 80 to 1 and above that win here, which kind of took me off the juicy 33s, 40s, 45s. These are the four I've gone for. I'll start with the shortest prices. I know the price is terrible. You've got to hold your nose. But Shane Lowry at 18 to 1. I took him 8 places each way with Bet365. If you look at the strokes gain work that Paul pulls together here, and you look for players that have played multiple rounds in terms of, let's say, two appearances. Minwoo Lee ranks at 1, but he's only played 2 full tournaments. Cam Young at 2. Ben Arne at 3. Post-it note of doom. We then got Sepp Straka at 4 and Shane Lowry at 5. Bearing in mind, Shane Lowry has played 28 rounds across this golf tournament, which I believe in this field is the second most behind Billy Horschel. I just love Lowry this week. He's playing some really good golf. This is a home event for him. And if there was one golf course you could say is Shane made for, it's this one. Because I think this golf course requires, in normal circumstances, plenty of short game. I think you've got to be able to scramble. I think you've got to be able to make strokes from around the green here. You've got to be creative when you miss greens. I mean, clearly, when the wind's blowing hard, that becomes even more of a feature. But yeah, also, I think driving accuracy is very important here. And Shane has been driving the ball pretty long and pretty straight of late. He's the number one in this week's published predictor model. No, he's not. That's Daniel Berger. He's actually... Where is Shane Lowry? Can't find him. 17th. I'm talking rubbish. But yeah, I've gone for Lowry, the favourite. I mean, slightly uncomfortable, but there's 20 to 1 out there if you want to take 5 places in a quarter of the odds, the standard price. The other one, and I couldn't resist him. I knew the whole world would be on him, and why not? Daniel Berger. Again, if you're running statistical models like, you know, I did on the predictor model, Daniel Berger's going to be in your top 3 pretty much whatever you do. And you can't say he's not playing well. Second at the RSM Classic to save his PGA Tour card when the white heat was on at the end of last year. He's also finished second at Phoenix so far this season. So yeah, I've got Lowry and Berger at the top. Where are you two guys chipping in at, chaps, price-wise?
Well, I'm also on Lowry. I think he deserves to be favourite for this, and I think he's got a great chance of going well. And, you know, you talked about the combination of course form and the current form that he's got, and, second, fifth and fourth coming into this. Second at Pebble Beach recently, third at the DP World Tour Championship before Christmas. And if you look at Pebble Beach, you look at the Earth course there. He had Rory McIlroy ahead of him both times, and of course, got no Rory here in the field this week. No such issues. He's, you know, the path is much clearer, I think, for Shane. He's been playing some really nice stuff for quite some time now, and you get these kind of snippets with Larry when he talks in interview or just generally about the state of his game, and the feeling is that he knows he's pretty damn close to another win. Ryder Cup year, I think there's some massive motivation, and the field is okay. The field isn't great. The field isn't the best, and I don't think there's much in that field to worry him this week. So yeah, I'm on Shane, and I've got a longer shot further down the line. You're on Shane as well, Barry?
Yeah, last couple of weeks I've just been trying something out for fun, backing win only on the exchange. So it has gone okay. I can add a few more golfers in because I'm not backing each ways, so I can have kind of like six or seven for this adventure each week. So Larry is one of them. Not much more else to add than that. Makes an awful lot of sense. He's got a very good record here on a course where it's hard to have a consistently good record. So there's obvious agreement between his game, his head, and the course. So yeah, let's go.
I've looked at Shane, and anyone that's a Shane fan or golf betting follower would know this. He does not, and we've said this on this podcast a couple of times, he does not win off a top 10 finish the outing before. You look at when he wins, he tends to show something a couple of starts before, then you get a couple of kind of nothing results, and then bang, wins. I think the best finish he's had before winning was 12th at the BMW Championship, and then he had a month off, came across to Wentworth and won. So that form of second at Pebble Beach, he doesn't play Torrey Pines South at all well, so to actually finish mid-30s there, not a disaster. And then to win this on a golf course that suits him down the ground, it just shouted to me, Shane Lowry. That kind of trend, that kind of... That's what he does. So I couldn't resist. I didn't know what price he was going to be, but you knew he was going to be first, second, third, something like that. I think some are arguing that Russell Henry is the favourite, or their joint favourite. I'd rather, personally... I mean, this isn't setting the world on light with this view, bearing in mind he's on my post-it note. No. I would rather back McIlroy over Henley. So I've gone for, Lowry over Henley. I've got Lowry and Berger. I am then up to a player, and this is an accuracy call more than anything, Brian Harman. 55-1 I got on Brian Harman this week. And I thought that was a great price. William Hill, 8 place each way. Just... again, green shoots starting to come through. 14th for driving accuracy, 6th for greens in regulation, 4th for total accuracy at Torrey Pines last time out. Started abysmally. Now, if you said to me, Steve, tell me a golf course that Brian Harman is never going to do very well at, I'd say, well, Torrey Pines South's a good example at 7,800 yards. He actually played... Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7 under par, 209. He was in the top 10 for final 54 hole scoring. He was also in the top 10 for final 36 hole scoring Saturday and Sunday. Now, Poana, blah, 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 not Brian Harman, but put him on a golf course where he can be accurate off the tee and on Bermuda grass in Florida, I'm quite happy with that. He's got a great record at Sawgrass, a decent enough record at Bay Hill, which is far too long. I think he's got 4 top 17s there. Bay Hill's never going to be Brian Harman country. But PGA National, a short golf course, soft conditions. Harman's always been one of those players that thrives. He likes softer conditions with a bit of cut in the turf and a great putter. Yeah, I thought Harman at 55-1. Bearing in mind, Harman is he's under real pressure. Won the Open, became a kind of journeyman made good. He's at a bit of a crossroads here. Can he drive himself into a Ryder Cup team this season? This kind of tournament on a short golf course, Bermuda grass, accuracy is a positive situation this week. I think Harman needs to kind of grab these events with both hands. He's he's clearly going to play three straight. He's going to play this, Bay Hill, and then the Players. We were on board at the Players last year. Well, I believe he ended one shot shy of a playoff with Scotty Scheffler. So Harm and I took at 55-1. I've got one left at 90s. Any interest in this mid-range, Barry?
No, we're going deep this week.
Okay, I'll throw in then my last selection. It's Nico Echeverria. This is a guy that actually wins on the PGA Tour. Two wins in his last 58 starts. Wins in Corrales, wins at the end of last year in Japan at the Zozo. His base is around here in Florida, even though he's Colombian. Plays a lot of golf around here. He's a Ponte Vedra Beach guy. You think about it. He was runner-up at the RSM Classic at the end of last year as well, following on from his Zozo victory, Bermuda Grass, Coastal, Windswept Golf Course. He was then a runner-up again at the Sony Open second week of 2025. Played reasonably well last week, last time out, 34th at the Genesis at Torrey Pines. I'd never say Torrey Pines is a Nico Echeverria golf course. But he actually shot rounds of 71 on Saturday, on Thursday, 68 on Saturday. They were both top 10 scores those particular days. Second for driving accuracy and 14th for ball striking. Nico Echeverria, I got 90-1 with Betfred, eight places each way. So Echeverria, Harman, Berger and Shane Lowry are my four. Right, throw some long shots out there, chaps. Paul, you first, or a long shot from you.
Yeah, the only other one I've backed is Joel Damon at 125-1. And after his performance last week, sixth last week in Mexico, but also ninth at the Farmers, I think he's playing good enough golf to be a far shorter price in this relative strength of field. He's putting better too. Top 15 for strokes gained putting over both of those events. And we know he's been striking the ball quite well for some time now. So putting that all together, I think he can go well here. 33rd on debut here back in 2018 and a couple of miscuts since. So that probably explains why he's languishing down in the triple digit level. But if you look back, he's been playing pretty poorly before each of those three efforts here in the past. And two top tens in his last three starts coming into this is distinctly better form, in my view. So, yeah, quite happy to take a chunky price on Joel Damon and see how he goes this week. I'd be surprised if Barry's not on him as well.
I am indeed. It makes sense. Like, if he's competing on a course that needs an awful lot of length last week, you know, not super high competing, but a good week, then he's striking it well. So yeah, there are good green shoots in the game there. So I have him on the exchange at 150. So this part of the win only strategy. Let's see what happens. Steve, I've put a little couple on Echeverria as well. Like what you're saying, Adam, makes sense. And part of the sprinkling, this really is just like dusting sugar across the cake. Kevin Roy, why did I pick him again? Oh yeah, he's number one on tour for total driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, long and straight. It's a real advantage here.
Terrible skill set to have, like eighth in greens in regulation as well. So he's made my team as well. And I just because he disappointed you last week, I felt obligated to do this. So Christopher Ventura, he's made the squad to just over 200 on the exchange. And then the last one I have is clicking in at, I've got him at blended over 400 to on the exchange. It's Jackson Suber, who is now, albeit from only 10 measured rounds this year, he is number one on tour in strokes gained approach.
Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah,
he certainly is. Barry, if you're with your super squad on the exchange, Would you ever trade out from a green situation, sort of on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning? Or you literally just come hell or high water? I don't mind a trade. I'll trade. If I put £20 on the exchange and someone's offering me 700, there's a 750 trade out, I'll take it. But I know that's not how your brain functions or Paul's functions that way.
No,
it was interesting the story Paul said the other day about he set a 2 trade and it got to 2.04 and it never automatically traded and he lost the lot. Yeah. What's your situation, Barry? Will you trade?
Historically, I'm dreadful. In theory, I go in with all these great ideas about trading and getting profit and going to the next week. But I've kind of, my nature is that I prefer to be correct rather than actually just taking profit. So I want to have picked the winner from the start and just stayed with my conviction the whole way through. But that's just a terrible strategy. So it took me until after the first playoff hole on Sunday night, but I finally went, do you know what? I'm just going to trade out a bit to cover all my bets for the week. So I did that. And then immediately, I mean, this may have been the thing that triggered all the events that happened from Brian Campbell's tee shot. My trading out could have been the butterfly effect that caused his ball to bounce back in OB. I can't discount that possibility, but so in general, I love sitting on it and getting and being right and getting the call correct from the very beginning. But that's kind of dumb because there's times I'll just back people in play, so I wasn't right from the beginning. So I do now think I may just do some trading out and just get a bit of at least cover my best for the week rather than just sit putting it all on one player down the stretch. Degenerate head on me, really is.
Yeah, no, I'll get that, Barry. Sometimes you just want to prove that you were right in the first place and stick to your convictions there. I think you get such a premium sometimes on longer players that if a player's generally, say, 200 to 1 and you've managed to pick him up 400 on the exchange, then you could quite reasonably, should he get to even money, you could quite reasonably trade the whole lot out, take the 200 to 1 winner, which is what you would have been paid anyway, had you done it through a regular bookie, and just be done with it from there. But then you've got a massive number staring in the face, and the gambler in me particularly feels a bit dirty by cashing out at that kind of level. Anyway,
that's it. It's the dirty feeling, isn't it? You're like, no, I've just like forgotten my own to believe in myself. There's one other point though I'd like to make, that when you back somebody who is less than a premium, top star name, when it comes to the exchange, their lay price and their back price aren't really always matching with their position in the tournament, because there's a built-in he could crap the bed here and lose, which can, possibly happens a less than superstar player more often than it happens a superstar player. So when you think you should be getting maybe down towards 2 point something, or even just to 1.9 something for a less than stellar name, he's probably 3 or 4 shots clear at that stage. So in that situation,
standing over the winning putt.
Yeah, in that situation, sometimes it takes until that late in the tournament to get a price that's a good trade price in your head. So you just sit on it and just let it happen. So the market forces me into a situation where I just kind of go with it all the way.
I'm just going to say one thing and then we'll go to South Africa. I forgot the strokes gain splits for the golf course. 24%, this is over the last four winners, 24% of total strokes gained off the tee, which is quite light. 37 on approach, which is incredible. 17 for around the green, that's quite strong. 78% tee to green, 22% with the putter. So it is a real tee to green test this week. Now, I'm going to step back now because I've got to say I've got no South African Open selections whatsoever. I just haven't had time. I've been trying to catch up from disappearing for a week. So over to you two. Take it away, Paul and Barry. Investec South African Open on the DP World Tour.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, one of golf's oldest opens, actually. I guess there's the history going back over 100 years, I think, if you dig all the way through it. Not the most stellar of fields, though. Dean Burmester is the 11-1 favourite. He was the 2023 champion back end of 2023. This South African Open, if you look through the history, it's a real minefield of data because you've got some events that fell into the following season but were played in the year before, so when you're looking at dates and history, you wouldn't believe the challenges I go through pulling the stats together for the site. Anyway, less of that. Dean Burmester, 2023 champion, 11-1 favorite. Laurie Canter, 14-1. Jordan Smith, 22s. The aforementioned John Parry, 28-1, same price as Johannes Veerman. Shoal Swartzel, Jaden Shaper, 30-1, 35-1 by those players. So that's the kind of field we are dealing with this week. Ball Sports have gone 10 places each way. A fifth of the odds are standard this week, so do check them out. Some good prices there for the extended each way option. Some really good strong each way options with Betfred and Bet365 this week. Both got 8 place options out there with some decent prices, so plenty of ways to play this week. Now, the South African Open is one of those nomadic events, is probably the best way to describe it. And this week, the event returns to the Durban Country Club. And that's for the first time since Ernie Els won here back in 2010. There have been lots of change.
That's a gap.
Yeah, it is a gap. So we've got some history, but yeah, you have to go all the way back to 2010 on the stats this week to find it. Lots of changes to the course since then, though. They've tried to tackle persistent flooding issues here and tried to bring it back closer to its original specification as well, the course, which they've done. It looks fantastic. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing the course on the TV. It looks spectacular. One of these true coastal affairs that's been around for a long time. But they've pulled it all back. They've kind of they've tried to get back to the roots with this and turn it back into its original spec. Fundamentally, though, it's still a short sub 6,800 yard coastal track. It's par 72 as well. Classical in style, so it's tight, there's dogleg holes, that sort of thing. But over the years, the course had kind of taken on more of almost a parkland feel. The trees and the shrubbery on the course had grown quite considerably, and if you looked at overhead shots of the course over the years, it almost looked like a parkland course by the coast. They've stripped back a lot of that for this year. They've cleared away a lot of the foliage, added some new water features, added new tees, added new bunkers, refined all the bunkering as well. All 18 of the greens have been relayed as well. This is the last year or so since 2023. They've changed the greens from paspalum to a new strain of bent grass. So they should be pretty slick, the greens. They might be a little bit firm because often it takes a little while for new greens to settle in, but they should be pretty slick. It certainly looks and feels like it's got much more of a linksy feel to the course as well now, from the previous style of course. So much more befitting of its coastal position. So for anyone who can remember the course from back in the day when it's hosted the South African Open before, then it will feel a little bit different, I think. Statistically, it is a bit of a muddle, as I said, with the data that we've got. We've got South African Opens going back to 2010, 2005 as well, Tim Clark, 2002 Tim Clark as well. We've got some smaller Sunshine Tour events that have been held here over the years as well, as recently as 2022. We also had the Volvo Golf Champions here in 2013 and 2014. Now, that was Europe's answer to the PGA Tour's Tournament of Champions back at the time, and didn't really take off. They did it for a few years and it dropped off. So you've got those events, generally those smaller events. Very few of the field are playing this week. So you got this kind of dilemma. Do I look at South African Open form? Do I look at very sparse course form, or try and splice something together in my mind? Anyway, I did list some of the basic stats from the events held here on my preview, just to give us an idea of what kind of player that might be the winning fit. And we've got winning scores varying from 12 under to 26 under here. So you get quite a bit of variation, or we have done in the past. JC Ritchie, who won in 2022, he was the guy who got to 26 under par on the Sunshine Tour here. Ernie Els, when he won in 2010, got to 25 under. But if the wind blows, then it can be a little bit trickier. So 12 under, one of Louis Oosthuizen's wins at the Volvo Golf Champions was at that level. So it can be impacted by the conditions. I think the biggest clue as to what kind of player this might suit, at least historically, is that Adelson da Silva has won here twice. Now, he's one of those players that if you ever see him statistically, he hits almost every fairway. He's one of the straightest drivers in the world, but generally struggles with a putter. Yet he's managed to win two of his events in his career on this particular course. If you combine that with the fact that you've got the Tim Clark a couple of times, Ernie Els, Louis Oosthuizen a couple of times as well, winning here, I think that historically keeping the ball in play could be, or has been, pretty key to success. Then, of course, we've had the renovation since then. So, who knows how it'll play this week. But, yeah, I think a little bit of accuracy is not going to hurt. I think the wind and conditions will dictate the winning score. We have got some pre-event rain expected. More showers are possible through the week. But although the wind picks up a little bit in the afternoons here, it is coastal golf, so the conditions can change. But I'm not seeing, like you, Steve, I'm not seeing anything excessive in the forecast in terms of winds. You know, maybe 10 to 15 mile an hour at times, but coastal courses are kind of built for that. So I don't think it's going to feel excessively windy unless local conditions just take over. So I think in that respect, it's going to be relatively straightforward to score. I think we're probably looking at 20 under or deeper. Famous last words there, but we'll see how it plays. And the only other thing to mention in terms of stats is that South African Open winners in general, going back to 2014, generally they'd had a top 20 or so in one of their past three outings. So a little bit of recent form doesn't seem to be too bad a starting point. Other than that, you know, it's almost like a blank canvas again with a course that's been completely renovated and looks and feels a little bit different. Historically, the South African Open's been a decent event for locals. Lots of South African winners. I've backed four players this week, three of whom are South Africans. And the headline for me this week is Danny van Tonder at 35-1. 33-year-old Danny now playing beautifully on the Sunshine Tour in 2025. His name has been popping up regularly on that tour. And yes, this is DP World Tour level, but you know, there's a lot of the similar players in this week's field. I'm not sure it's going to feel massively different to someone of Danny van Tonder's ability. Two wins from five starts so far this year. Finished no worse than ninth in his five starts in 2025. And shot a massive 27 under to win the My Golf Life Open just a few weeks ago. So can go deep if he needs to go deep here this week. Has won on the DP World Tour. He won the Kenya Open. Won this event back in 2021 when it was in the post-COVID time. So it was just a Sunshine Tour event at the time. So he is a South African Open previous champion. I'm sure he would want to win it when it's full DP World Tour sanctioned or co-sanctioned level as well. So that's what he'll get this week if he can succeed. 23rd here in Durban back in 2012 on this course, pre the renovation, of course. So has a little bit of course form. I think Danny van Tonder is the one to beat this week. So we shall see. Similar position in the market. I've also backed Sean Norris. A little bit of 40-1 out there for Norris. Great form at the back end of 2024. He won in Japan. He had a decent run on the Japan Tour over the autumn and then won over in Japan. Then won at Leopard Creek in December. That was his second co-sanctioned title of his career. Going for the hat-trick here this week. And I think he's in generally the kind of form that suggests he could well do that. Decent putter. His irons really did take a step forward at the back end of last year, and that's when he saw the success. Started 2025 off well as well. Sixth at the Rolex level Dubai Desert Classic, which is far better form than much of the field here can muster. Ninth at the My Golf Life Open recently. Not the best record on this course, not the best record in the South African Open in general, and I think that's why we're getting a little bit of a premium on the price. I think he's ready for a big personal best in the South African Open this week and could go particularly close. One player does have decent course form, though, is one that I've already mentioned, JC Ritchie, and I've backed him at 60 to 1 with 8 places. You can get a little bit of 70s out there, but I took the 60 with 8. South African player, he's won 10 times on the Sunshine Tour, the most recent of which was here at Durban. At one point, it opened up a 10-shot lead here, coasted to a 6-shot victory in the end. Could just plod around for a final round 71 and still managed to win by 6. Shot 26 under here. So was well suited to the course at the time. Of course, there's been some renovations since. So again, same caveat. We'll see how this plays out, but should have some fond memories of the course or the area at least. And playing some decent stuff in 2025. 4 top 14 finishes from 5 starts. He topped the field for greens in regulation last time out at the Dimension Data Pro-Am on the Sunshine Tour. So irons are working. It's been hitting it nice and straight in general. I think JC Ritchie could go well again this week. And then finally, a longer shot. I'll take some inspiration from Adelson De Silva and I'll back Joel Gerbach. I've backed him at 175 to 1 with 8 places each way. Again, you can get a little bit longer if you want to take the bog standard each way places, but with 175 to 1, 8 places, that seems like the right option to me. One of the most metronomic on the tour in terms of how he performs from off the tee. Second for driving accuracy last year. That was for the full season. Top 10 for driving accuracy so far this season. So hitting it nice and straight. Last year, he finished third in China, and that was off the back of a pair of top 20s. Arrives here in similar form. He was 20th last week in Kenya. Second for driving accuracy last week. Third for greens and regulation last week. That's pretty typical stats for him, and they're the kind of stats that can work around this course, I think. It is his course debut, but the renovations level the playing field quite substantially, I think, this week. So happy to take a chance on Joel. But that's my four. Joel Gerbach, JC Ritchie, Sean Norris and Daniel Van Tonder. So Steve, you're out this week. Barry, you got any picks for South Africa?
Steve, you could have picked a couple of golfers while Paul was talking, just like I have done.
I'm reading the newspaper. Sorry.
Jesus. Let me see. I've gone for one long South African, Jovan Rebula.
Yep. Yeah. It popped up quite a bit of my predictive variations, actually.
That's what I liked. I saw it popping up and there was a big price beside his name. So there we go. We landed on him. That's had a nice sequence of results on the tour down there. So let's see if he's just in a comfort zone and can just step it up this week.
Why not?
Yeah, I was looking at others like Martin Kuvra, David Rivetto. Rivetto hasn't really kicked hard this year, hasn't he, after a pretty good year last year. Interesting to see if he's just coming out of his winter hibernation. And there's another one who I think I will do it. Marco Penge. Or Peng, yep. I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Penge.
Yeah, hits at a mile, so I'm going to go with the flip of what worked last week. Campbell was like the shortest in the field, or one pretty much, and he won on the course that kind of arguably wanted maximum distance. So this is the complete opposite of that. Of course,
go with the illogic and see if it works. But yeah, then these longer players can can club down. There's, you know, there's different ways that you can spin these the justification for these players. But we'll see. We'll see. He's served his time, Penge, hasn't he? He served a ban for some gambling issues on the in golf. So
did he? I did not know that.
It was relatively relatively low key. They didn't make a massive thing about it, but he was back last week for another stint.
The irony of putting a bet on him then. Okay. What are we going to do?
But yes, that's us then, Steve, I think.
We're done, are we? Looking at the published predictor model this week for the Cognizant Classic. Jackson Suber's in there at 18, Barry. So clearly some decent number. Must be all approach. Tee to green.
Mm-hmm.
I wish everybody a good week with their betting and their DraftKings teams and all of their leagues. I hope your bets go well, champs.
Yeah, best luck, boys.
You too, boys.
We'll be back next week. Arnold Palmer Invitational on the DP on the PGA Tour. And what have you got, Paul?
It's the Joburg Open next week.
At high altitude. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.